For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Good evening. Welcome back. I'd like to go through, as we begin the Lamed Tes Melachos, with the list. And just to give you the overview of all Lamed Tes, and get a better vision of where we're going with all this. So we're looking at the page that says List of Lamed Tes Avos Melachos, and top right you see order number one. Right underneath that you see Sidur de Pas. Sidur de Pas is the Gemara's term, which means the order of making bread, which we discussed a couple classes ago. And that, again, is the only order, the only subcategory, list of categories, which the Gemara itself explicitly mentions as a set. So that is that that set. Yeah, you're welcome to pass these back down. Thank you. So let's just go through those 11 first of all. Aleph Choresh, ladies, is plowing. Is plowing. And Bays number two is Zareya, which is planting. Again, we're going down the list on the right side. So Aleph is plowing. Thank you. Zareya is planting. Gimel is Kotzer is harvesting. Kotzer is harvesting. That's Gimel number three. Ma'amer is gathering. Ma'amer is gathering. Hey, Dush is threshing. Number five, Dush is threshing. Vav Zore is winnowing. Winnowing. You know, some of these things are not terribly familiar to us city folk. And we will certainly go through each of these and discuss them more in depth. Zion, a very important malacha, is borer, is separating or sorting. Separating or sorting. Ches is tochen, is grinding. Tes merakade is kneading, as in a dough, kneading. Yod lush is, I'm sorry, nine, I messed up, I'm sorry. Tes merakade is sifting, is what I meant to say, I apologize. Tes merakade is sifting. Yod lush is kneading. Got ahead of myself there. So again, tes is sifting. And Yod Lush is kneading, as in dough. And then Yod Aleph, this does get a little confusing. Ofa is baking. And Bishul is cooking. Ofa is baking. Bishul is cooking. They are one and the same, though. Halacha does not distinguish between them. The one listed in the Mishnah is Ofa, is the first one. But the one that you and I know it by, typically, more commonly, is the second one listed there, Bishul. And just to be clear, they're not, we discussed last time, or two times ago, Ovos and Toldos, and these are both Toldos. They're both Ovos. They're both the main category, even though they're different terminologies and slightly different processes. They're both considered an Av. Okay, so that's Sidur de Pas. That's the first 11, which we readily and quickly see is, to this very day, nothing has changed except the combine, etc. The way it's done has improved, obviously. But the basic process is exactly how we get bread on our table today. You start with Choresh, Zareya. We'll talk about Choresh and Zareya in that order. And it ends with sticking the dough in the oven. That's exactly the process. Very logical. We all understand that. Okay, so let's go through the rest while we're here, although we're not going to get to these for quite some time. Order 2, 3, and 4, I want to reiterate, are not listed specifically in the Gemara. If someone comes along and you tell them there's four orders and they say, no, where'd you get that from? You'll understand that this is not necessarily, it's just I think it's very logical, it seems to be pretty clear, but for whatever reason the Gemara did not spell it out. So, if someone argues with you, not a hill to die on type of thing. This is the order of garments, so Yud Bey's goes is shearing. I'm going to read it. So, is shearing, we're talking about sheep here. We're talking about wool. Yud Gimel Malabain is bleaching. You'll notice the word lavan, white, is in that term. Yud Dalin Menafet is combing. It's combing, it's 14. Tes Vav Tzoveya is dying. It's dying, coloring. Tes Zayin Tove is spinning. Mesech is warping, it's called.
Warping?
Warping.
Can you spell it?
Yes, W-A-R-P-I-N-G. Right, exactly. It's part of the exactly. It's part of the weaving process. And the picture book has a great. the picture book. When we get there, we'll go through the picture book. It has a great illustration of this whole. It's really amazing. We took a field trip last year to the Atlanta Historical Society, and they showed us this whole process. Fascinating. I mean, really, the only working loom apparently in Georgia is in Buckhead. Yeah, it's just a vast. It's just really neat to see it. How complicated! It's just incredible. Okay, Osa Shnei Bati Nirin is constructing two heedles, so that the loom has heedles now they're probably metal, but H E D D L E S, I believe is how you spell it.
Heedles.
Heedles. I believe.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how it's spelled over here. So that the in the loom, the goal of force of the loom is that some of the fabric goes up, some of the yarn goes up, and some of it goes down. So the heedle is the thing, the eye, if you will, that you put the yarn through, and then it goes up and down. Again, the picture speaks, you know, 1,000 words. But that's Osesh Devatinir, and yes, in our regular lives we will never be doing most of these things. Number Yutes 19 is Oreg is weaving, the actual weaving process itself. Chaf is 20, is Potseya is removing, in this case, means removing the fabric from the loom, is a separate malacha. Okay, and now we get to a lot more practical stuff. Chaf Aleph Kosher is tying, as in knots. Kosher. Chaf Beis 22 is Matir, is untying. It's got tying and untying. And then Chaf Gimel 23 is Tofer, is sewing. And then Chaf Dal 24 is Korea, is tearing. We'll see those last four are very relevant today.
What is the last one?
Last one, Korea is tearing. Yeah. Okay, that's the end of that that particular order. Then moving to the top left, order number 3, the order of hides. Tzod is trapping. Chafav 26, Shochet is slaughtering. Chaf Zion 27, Mafshit is skinning. Chaf Ches 28, Ma'abed is tanning.
Tanning.
Chaf Tes 29, Memachek is smoothing. See, that's actually very practical. Lamed 30, Misartate is scoring. Not a goal in football, but Misartate is scoring, making lines really on the hides. Misartate. And then Lamed Aleph Mechatech is cutting to size. Last one of that order. Yeah, Lamed Aleph 31, Mechatech is cutting to size. That's order number 3. Okay, last but not least, order number 4, the order of construction, Lam, and these all are actually very relevant. Lama Bey's Kosev is writing. is writing. Lamed Gimel 33 is Mochik is erasing.
Erasing.
Erasing. Lamed Dalid is Bona is building. It's building. Lamed Hey is Soter. Soter is destroying. Lamed Vav 36. Makabapad is one of the most difficult to understand Malachos in the entire list. Is the final hammer blow. Final hammer blow is a literal translation. We'll talk a lot about that when we get there. Makabapatish is a final hammer blow. Lamed Zayin Mechaba 37 is extinguishing. Extinguishing. Lamed Ches Mavir is kindling. Starting a fire. Kindling. And then Lamed Tes, last but not least, is Hotzah, is carrying. We're all familiar with that on some level. Hotzah is carrying, moving things from one place to another. That rounds out the Lamed Tes Malachos. So you see a couple of things here. You see, first of all, that there's certain Malachos which have sisters, so to speak. There's some mirrors here. Kosev, Mochek, Mavir, Mechabe. We see several Malachos, and in many ways, they are, you know, the Halachos are very similar. Bona and Soster, building and destroying, they're flip sides of the same coin. Kosher and Matir, tying and untying, which sometimes makes it easy. Some of the Malachos are really mirrors. If you know what you cannot do here, then you know exactly what, you know how to undo that very Malacha. So some of them make it, some obviously are independent, but many of them do have sister Malachos. Okay, any questions on that list, ladies? All right. So we'll certainly refer back to this regularly, and we're going to learn it in this order. So I think it's good just to see the whole picture. Okay, now let's turn to the first of the Malachas, Malacha Aleph, which is Choresh. And we're going to go through these, and some of the sheets are, you know, happy with the way I put it down. Some are not so happy, so there'll be some changes as we go. The first thing we'll notice, ladies, is that the translation and the definition very often are not the same. The translation, as someone pointed out to me many years ago, when we translate from one language to another, by definition, we bring with it all the baggage from the language we're translating to, which is not necessarily implied. Right? Shakespeare in French doesn't quite work. It's just not how he wrote it. So, we say so much. How much more so when you're talking about Lashon HaKodesh, talking about Hebrew, Hashem's language, so to speak, and you try and translate it into English, obviously there are limitations to that. So, we said before, Choresh, the translation was plowing. The definition almost always is much broader than the legal definition in Hilchos Shabbos is almost always much broader than the translation. Is the preparation for preparation for potential planting. Say that 10 times fast.
So, can I just, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In this, where it says translation definition, where you've got all of the order of bread, so the translation is for...
Yeah, we're going to do...
Just order of bread, or...
Like, no, actually, we're just going to do each malacha, so the translation here would be plowing,
okay.
And the thought when we designed the sheet was to have that list in front of the students, you know, all the time, so it would eventually become... put the memory.
Okay.
But yeah, that's just a...
Okay.
You know, like a... on a website, just the sidebar type of thing. But now we're focusing on Choresh, just the first Malacha. So the translation here is plowing. Definition, again, is preparation for potential planting. So you see already it's much more than this physical act of taking a plow and going to the ground. It's much broader than that. Okay. The source from the Mishkan, the little box there on the right, there's a lot more space really in both of these boxes than necessary. This is the, as we said before, the order of making bread. So one of the approaches, there are a couple, three approaches, but one of the basic approaches to this whole thing is this was the activities involved, the creative activities involved in making the bread that was part of the lechem, the shulchan, the bread that was put on the table, the special table in the Mishkan. So these are the activities that were necessary to make those breads. There are other approaches as well, but that's certainly the most obvious and most readily understood. So that would be the source from the mission, so to speak, is the steps. And I'm not going to really repeat it, each of the 11 steps, but each of these are the order of making those breads that were in the Mishkan. Okay, so this is the first example where the sheet is lacking somewhat after using it and seeing, and so that you can put it on this sheet right here below the boxes. You can put it on the back if you like and make a little more space. But before the word applications, which already is specific examples, there really should be a space there for concept, for concepts, really. Right, again, if you want to squeeze it in there or just put an asterisk and put it on the back or the bottom. So there's really three, for our purposes, there's three different things, activities one can do with the earth. And we're going to distinguish between the three. One is loosening. A, if you will, is loosening. B is flattening the earth. And C is compressing. So again, we've got loosening, flattening, and then compressing. So that Choresh, ladies, is the focus really is on loosening the dirt. Loosening the dirt to get ready to then put the seeds in the loosened dirt. You don't want to put the seeds on top. It's not a very effective. It certainly can grow. We see it happen. But certainly to be more successful in your planting activities, you want to loosen the dirt first, make the furrows, make the grooves, make the holes, whatever you're going to make. That is Choresh. So loosening is certainly the prohibition here that we're talking about under Choresh. Flattening, we'll see, is also prohibited in many circumstances. Compressing typically is not prohibited. See of this, compressing the dirt down, we'll see many examples. Walking is an example. Where you're compressing the dirt down, that is not prohibited under Choresh. Okay, I hope that's clear. So again, under the concepts that we're adding in here, we've got loosening, we've got flattening, and then compressing. So loosening is prohibited. Flattening certainly can be prohibited under certain circumstances, and compressing typically is not prohibited. Compressing the earth down is permissible. Sense?
Mm-hmm.
Questions? Okay. All right. So now let's get back to what we have here on our sheet. So some applications. So sandbox. Can kids play in the sandbox on Shabbos? So, generally, the truth is, there is nothing, it's not prohibited to play in sand on Shabbos, because it's, while they may be loosening the sand, most sand, if it's not, I guess there could be exceptions to this, but it's not going to hold its form. Not going to hold its form. So that Choresh is only prohibited, one of the rules of Choresh is going to be, it's only prohibited if, when you loosen it up, it stays that way.
But if it's wet, stays it will place. Stay this way. If it's wet?
Yes. So if it's wet, or if it's certain compounds of sand, that certainly, we've probably all seen, that is a potential problem, yes.
But if a kid is playing sand, he's not playing planet.
True. Certainly his intention is not to do that. That's definitely true. So then you get into the issues we discussed before of kavana, of what. So what you're basically pointing out is with biblical prohibition, it wouldn't be. That's the furthest thing from his mind is to have something grow in his sandbox. That would not be fun. But it's still, there would be cases where that may be, in other words, if that was the only issue at hand, it still would be prohibited because it's still the same act. It would be rabbinically prohibited. But here we're saying that it is the act of loosening the dirt so that it can then be plantable. Here, if the sand just collapses back in when he's done, that's not a prohibition at all.
And so consider the creativity, the kids are create something, like they're building a sandcastle.
Oh, very good question. So sandcastles, yes, once it's wet, you add water or you're at a beach and that type of thing, that could be a biblical prohibition, yes, of bonehead. It won't be biblical because it's not permanent. One of the issues we discussed before under Melechus Machshavos was permanence. So this would be a rabbinic problem. If it was. It's very soft and very, once you take the bucket off, it falls apart. That's really not a problem. Now, the other question everyone's wondering is. The other question you're wondering, of course, is muktzah. isn't sand muksa? Category C. So I'm afraid if I didn't pose this question, you'd go home and not be able to sleep tonight. So what's the answer to that question, ladies? Muksa yes, muksa
yes.
No?
I would. It's no practical purpose.
Right.
Okay.
It doesn't benefit anything on Shabbos.
What's that?
If it's wet, it's muksa. If it's not, it's not.
Okay. Because once it's wet, we said before, you can't use it. Okay. Well, certainly sand on the side of the street for sure would be muksa. No question. Category C. It has no purpose. It's not a kli. It's not designated. Sand in a sandbox. You get one of those green, turtle guys with a cat. That actually would not be muksa because it's set aside for the kids to play with.
Like the rock that we use as a doorstop.
Exactly. Exactly. That rock becomes a doorstop. So this sand, assuming that's all it's used for is to play with, would actually not be muksa because that's what it's used for. It's like sand in a bag, a bag of sand to hold open the door would be the same as a rock. It would not be muksa.
Is there any limited activities that kids can do in a sandbox?
Yeah,
they can stick and they can write something
right.
In the sand.
So that's exactly where I was going. Is it a good idea to encourage kids to play in a sandbox? Probably not.
Why
because
can't you just say you can't do it on Shabbos?
Right. That's what I'm saying. You're getting into... this happens to be one of the examples where uses in his books. I share it with you. But yes, for all practical purposes, not the best idea for kids to play in a sandbox on Shabbos. The worst things... But we all see, I think, readily how this could lead to certain problems. The sand does get wet, and then you got building issues, you got writing issues. They start putting their name in there. There's certainly issues. But the letter of the law, assuming all these things are true, it actually would not be muksa. It would not be choresh. Okay. Now, the next item, next example on our list here is removing debris. So we're talking here about moving debris, garbage, or rocks, more likely, from dirt. So let's say you're coming home from Shabbos, and you see this in your lawn, and you want to remove that. So that actually would be a problem of choresh, removing that from your lawn, because removing debris from a place where things grow is considered preparing it for planting. And that's certainly one of the processes a farmer would go through, is to remove all that junk. You're typically talking about boulders and logs and things, but even if you're talking about a much smaller thing, where that rock is, grass didn't grow, and if you remove the rock, grass certainly could grow. So that would be an example. You see candy wrapper or something like that. So certainly if it's just resting on the surface of the grass, no problem. Unfortunately, after Kiddush, there's always plates and stuff. That's not a problem. But if the garbage is already part of the landscape, and you remove it from the landscape, that's actually a problem of choresh. That should not be done on Shabbos.
So if you invite someone over for a Shabbos meal and there is debris in your driveway but they can't get to the stairs, is it permitted?
So to remove it from somewhere, it's actually later down on the list, if it's on the driveway, on the cement, it's not a choresh issue at all because the area has to be plantable. It has to be somewhere where something could grow. So someone to take garbage and throw it out from the sidewalk, from the driveway, from your garage, that's not a problem. We're talking specifically about a place here which could potentially grow later.
And it's really only if it disturbs the ground that it becomes an issue.
Right. Right. Then you're removing it, makes it usable. Correct. But certainly if it's on the surface, that's not a chorish issue at all. Okay. The next example, flattening furrows or filling in holes, this is a specific example discussed in the Gemara, and this, in fact, would be usur, as we mentioned earlier. It's loosening, and it's also flattening, making the ground nicer, that kind of thing, which, one can imagine, you're standing, on the sidewalk, and you're just playing, your foot with your shoe. This could something, absentmindedly maybe, but this is something that we should be aware of, that one shouldn't just, make it smoother out, make it nicer. That is considered choresh. Again, if your mind is not really there, it's only rabbinic, but it's something that one should avoid, flattening it out, making it nice and pretty. That should be, it's also on Shabbos, should not do that on Shabbos. Now, walking, even on moist, on muddy ground, something like that, is not a problem. This is where the idea of compressing comes in.
because when you're putting your foot down, that is compressing the earth down. That's not loosening it. That's not your goal. Certainly, is not to smooth it out and make it look pretty. You're simply pushing your foot down. That's compressing it. That is permissible. No problem. No problem at all. The question everyone always asks is, what about words on the bottom of your shoe? You have, I can't think of a dress lady shoes, but you have Reebok or something, right, on the bottom of your shoe. So that we'll talk more about when we get to Kosek, get to writing, but that typically is not a problem. Certainly if one shouldn't go around, you know, kids making designs and stuff, that you shouldn't do. Go out of your way, use your shoe to make a design, that would be a problem with Kosek. But just walking in, it happens to, you look behind you and there's the advertising, that's not a problem. That's not a problem at all on Shabbos. Not a problem. Okay, strollers. Similarly, pushing a stroller through the woods, through mud, through whatever it is. Generally, we say also that's not a problem. You're compressing, you're not loosening. The one word of caution that the Sfar and the Halacha gives here is one shouldn't start making zigzags and start making, you know, all that kind of stuff, because then you are kicking it up and making furrows and all that. You know, just going straight through with no other intention than getting from point A to point B is perfectly fine. Okay, dragging objects. So again, this is a classic case in the Gemara. The picture book has this example from the Gemara. And when you do make a distinction between a light object and a heavy object, so the Gemara's example is a light bench versus a heavy bench. The assumption being that a light object will not necessarily make a furrow as you're dragging it. It's light enough that maybe you get a little bit, but generally speaking, pulling that is not going to necessarily make that groove, whereas a heavier object will. And the lighter object, therefore, will be permissible to drag if it's not going to necessarily make that furrow, whereas a heavier object would be also would be prohibited to drag through the dirt. You have to get someone else, lift it up. And this, ladies, touches on the concept that we discussed before in the introductory concepts of Sikresha. Sikresha, remember, is doing Act A, where Act B will definitely happen, is prohibited. And then we got into whether it is beneficial or not beneficial. One suspects, assumes in this case, it not be beneficial. But we said that Sikresha across the board really is prohibited. So that the difference between a beneficial psychoreation and non-beneficial is in other things. If there's other ingredients we can add into this mix, then we can allow certain psychoreations. As we'll see, we talked about the freezer example, Mrs. Glassman's freezer. We talked about that as a psychoreation that was okay. But anyway, without getting too far afield here, dragging objects, again, if it's a lighter object and it wouldn't necessarily make that furrow, is permissible. If it's a heavy object and it will for sure make that the groove in the ground, even if that's not your intention, that is prohibited, and you'd have to get around it somehow. Get someone to help you. All right, so now, except maybe in Sukkot, it's not terribly. Even Sukkot, we all have decks. It's not the most practical. Okay, places that are not suitable for growing anything, this is actually more relevant to the next malacha. But even if it's dirt, but if it really can't grow, then there's no prohibition of choresh. So that a path, a well-trodden path that you know is not going to be able to, there's enough traffic, it's not going to grow anything, there actually is no prohibition of choresh on that spot. Now, so dragging a heavy object, let's say, down that path, even though it's making a furrow, would be okay. One would have to be careful, the sides are growing, the middle's not growing, you know. But just, at least the theory of it is, if it really can't grow anything, then there's no prohibition of choresh. Choresh is strictly limited to preparing for potential planting, potential growth. And here nothing can grow. Okay. And then the last item on your sheet is sweeping dirt onto the lawn. This is a little more practical. So, dirt, we mean dirt. We mean organic material. So this actually could in fact be prohibited. Could be prohibited under the category of choresh, and we'll see in a few minutes under Zoraya also, potentially. So one should not do that. one should not sweep organic material, you know, certainly non-organic garbage, that kind of thing. I don't know if you want to do that in the first place. That's not a prohibition of Choresh or Zareah. But organic material, leaves, dirt, that kind of stuff, one really should not sweep onto the onto your lawn.
Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, this the truth is, this really gets more into conceptually, it fits better into Zareah. So I think it'll make more sense when we get there. But certainly, the, anything that's going to enhance, you know, if you have compost or anything like that, things that are decomposing, you know, anything which could theoretically encourage growth would be a problem.
If the dog shits through all of the front porch, you should sweep it off.
Say again?
If the dog came and shook himself off and got dirt all over the front porch, you shouldn't sweep it off.
You can sweep it onto, certainly onto the driveway or onto the walkway.
No, but I mean, if
it's on the
inside of this garden, you
but,
shouldn't,
right.
because it could contribute
right.
to the betterment.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Again, that makes that's fit better under the category Zareah. Okay, I'm sure I didn't miss anything under Choresh. Okay, so again, not you know not that many applications in our world, but that's the first malacha. The okay, any questions on Choresh, ladies? Okay, so let's move on to Zareah, to number two. The translation already we said is planting. And the definition, again, is much broader than that. It's the start or promotion of plant growth in any way. So again, it's the start or promotion of plant growth in any way. So it's not just, I mean, the definition is trying to get at the fact that it's not just putting the seed in the ground, which we understand, I think, readily is planting, and that's not something you and I typically do, but it's promoting plant growth. Anything which is already planted, already growing, already could be, well, a tree that's been there for 50 years, but doing anything that promotes its growth, its continued you know, good health, is also Zareah. There's also this prohibition of planting. So the word planting itself, again, doesn't, you know, does not really... speak to what the malacha really is. Okay, application seeds. Certainly one cannot plant seeds. The more practical example for us would be pits. You know, you finish the peach and your norm would be to throw it in the backyard and see what happens. Cannot do that. Or Rabbi Friedman's story about watermelons in the old building. You've heard the story, sounds like that. He saw someone, you know, before this building, so we're going back 12, 13, 14 years at least. And I remember seeing the watermelon actually. He mentions a story, I think it was in Yom Tov, that he knows someone eating watermelons just outside the shul, just outside the house that we had, and throwing the watermelon seeds on the grass. Shabbos, Yom Tov, you know, he just took note of it. And then, lo and behold, several months later, there were small watermelons growing on that very spot. And I do remember seeing them. I'm like, well, I'm wondering how in the world these things get here. So that's what's prohibited. Can't do that. Cannot spit the watermelon seeds or the peach seeds, peach pits, or all that kind of stuff into any area where it could grow. Again, the driveway, the, you know, not a problem at all.
So was it uprooted for that purpose?
Say again?
Was the watermelon uprooted for that purpose?
Uprooted meaning?
In terms of, did they dig it up?
Yeah. Were they?
Did they dig it up so that it wouldn't grow? Once they noticed it growing.
Oh, that I don't know. That's a good question. Could you, if you knew that
it was benefited from it?
Fruit.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
right.
A great question. If you knew they were planted on Shabbos,
right.
I've never thought of it in that context. But you're right. On the surface, one should not benefit from those. That's a very interesting point.
Did you grow something?
Did we? I mean,
the watermelon grew.
I don't know how. I don't remember if they were sizable. If anyone ate, I don't remember. I just remember seeing, when I remember, I mean, it's been years already, but I think they were pretty small. Yeah, one suspects the first harvest as well. I don't know. But anyway, that's a good point. That's an excellent point you're making. Generally speaking, we do not benefit from malachot on Shabbos. That's a very good point. Okay. Yeah, I have to ask him if he remembers what became of them. Okay, watering. Watering the lawn, the example given before, but the dog coming in with water, certainly taking water in any shape or form and putting it on the grass, on trees, on plants in the house, all that kind of stuff is prohibited on Shabbos. So that would be the most obvious example would be watering the plants in your kitchen or in your living room, which you do on a regular basis, keep them healthy. That would be a biblical prohibition of Zareya on Shabbos. A maybe less obvious example of this would be a swing. Kids want to go out and swing, back of the shul, for example, and it just rained. So what do? You dump the swing, you take all the, you shake the swing out of all the rainwater that has accumulated in the swing. So that is a potential problem of Zareya. I say potential only because, theoretically, theoretically, right under the swing, nothing's growing anyway, so that water lands in the dirt, it's not going to produce growth.
But I've seen...
So you got to be careful.
I could easily see a child outside, or even a person, unintentionally, they've got a cup, there's extra liquid in it, they dump it out.
Right.
Not thinking about it.
Right. Yeah, you should definitely try to... I mean, let's face it, we all make mistakes, carelessly do things, but certainly one shouldn't do that. Yeah, the normal, just toss the water in the grass type of thing cannot be done at Shabbos. Definitely not.
Yes, so. I was told that in the context of let's say it's been raining and you put a plastic tarp over your tent, and the sun comes down and you can't dump it over the side. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or if you're throwing the water out before you go in the house, you can't do that.
Right.
Correct.
Exactly right. Yep. Yeah, the tarp can get very complicated.
Well, for a lot of other reasons, but I'm just for the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying if you have set it up correctly, it's already out before Shabbos. We'll get to those particulars under Bona. But yeah, just for the water issues, one would have to be careful not to spill all that water onto the grass. Yep. Okay, so the swing set is just an example of Zoraya lurking in areas which you wouldn't necessarily expect it. Pruning or weeding, same idea. When you prune a tree, certainly if your intention is to prune it so it'll grow back better, that's part of Zoraya. If your intention is simply to cut it back, it's gotten too big, that would be the next malacha, which is kotzer, which is I forget the English word we use for kotzer is harvesting. It would be part of kotzer. Weeding also, removing the weeds from your lawn, the goal of that is that the lawn will grow better. So, it should be obvious in all of these cases, we're not talking about seeing immediate results, we're not talking about, before Shabbos is over, this plant will grow, there's nothing to do with that. The fact is, right now, you're doing an act which is promoting the growth of something growing, of organic, so that's prohibited. Similarly, covering plants, expecting it to freeze tonight or tomorrow night, whatever it is. So to go out and to throw something over those plants, whatever's growing, to do that before Shabbos is certainly fine, just like any other malacha. You prepare Friday afternoon for the freeze Friday night, that's perfectly fine. But to do it Friday night, to go out after the meal, let's say, and say, I want to save these flowers and throw something over them, can't do it. Because, again, in our mind, there's nothing to do with planting. But it's promoting the growth. It's keeping those plants healthy and safe so that they can continue growing. Cannot do that on Shabbos. Okay, sprinklers. Not enough room there to write all this. But sprinklers, I think it's clear that it should be obvious to put a sprinkler on Shabbos would clearly be prohibited. Cannot go out and turn on the sprinkler, set up a sprinkler on Shabbos. No way, no day. That's watering, just a more sophisticated watering. The question that's typically asked with sprinklers is setting it up on a timer. Can you have a sprinkler set up on a timer? So the answer to that is a little complicated. Theoretically, the answer is yes, it's perfectly fine. Theoretically, there's really nothing wrong because, as we've said many times, as long as the malacha is not being done by a Jew on Shabbos, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with the malacha completing on Shabbos, the challah right before Shabbos starts, all those examples that we gave. The only issue really with a timer, and this is something we'll touch on many times, that is Rav Moshe Feinstein, blessed memory, who was the posek of America until his passing in March of 86. I just remember as a high schooler, one of the important memories of my high school experience was hearing that Rav Moshe Feinstein passed. I never had the pleasure of meeting him, but very special Torah giant, they say, is one of the sweetest, nicest, yummiest, zany type people you'd ever meet. But he was really the go-to person for all major halakhic issues in the world. So he issued a ruling, a response to a letter about timers. I think it was in the 60s when he wrote this letter. And he said he did not want people using timers across the, but just whenever they want to on Shabbos. He was willing to allow it for lights and only for lights, because he was concerned, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but he was concerned that we would have the whole Shabbos hooked up to a timer, which today is not hard at all to imagine, and Shabbos would be out the door. It would just destroy the whole spirit of Shabbos, because, everything's controlled by your iPad. And he saw what was coming. Now, the question, of course, is how... it's a fascinating ruling, because it's almost like a new rabbinic decree. It's almost like a Gemara-style rule that we're not going to allow this. It's like a fence. We're not going to allow this because it'll lead to this, this, and that, which we generally don't do today. We generally don't have people making up new rules. Having said that, he was big enough to say it, and the vast majority of poskim, certainly Ashkenazi poskim, go with it, generally speaking. Having said that, we're not as strict as he put it out in the letter. So something like sprinklers, which is public, which is irrigating and agricultural and all that, is technically permissible, but if one wants to follow this, only Rav Moshe Feinstein, really would be something we would avoid. I remember learning this halacha several years ago with some men, and Randy Shaw asked the question about a drip coffee maker. I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but no. Drip coffee maker, why can't you set up your drip coffee maker to make coffee that goes on at 7:30 in the morning, and you come downstairs and smells good, fresh coffee. So when one looks into it, really, and we'll talk more about this when we get to Bishul, but the only real prohibition is the ruling for Moshe Feinstein, that he doesn't want everything running on timers. So certainly to have coffee up in an urn, that's fine. To set it up before a big silver urn, no problem. But to have it go on a timer Friday, Shabbos morning, we generally don't do. Question?
Maybe not everything.
What's that?
Not everything.
Not everything?
Because of the timer.
Just, two or three things.
Right. So that's the question. Where do we draw the line? So, I'll never forget we were staying once in the family in Tocco Hills, and they had the whole house hooked up to timers. So Friday night, 4:00 in the morning, the lights of the room go on.
No.
So that convinced me not to use timers. So it's something that our disadvantages to it also. How strictly air conditioning units, for example, I don't know who we is, but generally people do use timers for a window unit. You want it on. Let's say the shul, I think, had a timer in one of the rooms in the building next door. We used to use as a classroom. So you want it running till 12 noon, 1:00, but you don't want it running the whole day. So that's an example of where Ramosha probably would have said no way. But very often people are more so. It's definitely gray. Strict students of his would say no way, except for what he said is what we're going to do. Others would probably move it a little further. But many would be very, very hesitant to use it across the board, for obvious
reasons. If you think about it, our thermostats go up at noon and down at this.
Yes, all the digital ones these days, certainly. Yes.
But is that a difference because they're always a programmable
thing? You're heating in air.
But it's set differently for Saturday than it is for the other days of the week.
True.
Usually you don't want it running during the day, whereas on Shabbos you certainly do.
You do, right. Yeah, it's gone more than weekends. So that's something I suspect most Shomer Shabbos Jews do use on Shabbos without thinking twice. Again, obviously we're not talking about touching it on Shabbos. We're talking about setting it up before and letting it do its thing.
You probably just set it up at the beginning of the season for the most
part.
I mean,
absolutely.
You probably don't really have a summer mode and a winter mode. And a couple of times a year.
Right, that's the beauty of it. I finally gave in and got one. And they're great. I mean, yeah, I mean, the truth is when we changed ours out, I looked high and low and didn't end up finding it for a old-fashioned mechanical, because there are ways, we'll talk when we get there, of adjusting them. And then that one broke, and then realized, you know, it is just easier. Set it, it works.
You know, found the old-fashioned gun.
They are basically impossible to find.
Probably on the internet, I'm
sure. I mean, I thought I got one, and then I realized it's very hard to find these days, believe it or not. Now even the simple ones have batteries and have electronics play on. Life used to be simpler. Okay, anyway. So again, sprinklers get into this whole issue. So technically the answer is yes. Technically it's permissible if you set it up beforehand on a timer, you don't touch it, goes on, goes off, fine. But practically speaking, many, many posting will tell you don't do it. Because it is that slippery slope of how far do we want to go with rigging our lives.
So the question is,
yeah.
If you have a timer for the outside door, and it comes on only when it gets dark and goes off when it's light on, is that permitted?
You're talking about lights?
Yeah.
Exterior lights?
Exterior lights, right.
So generally, yeah, even Ramosha says lights he's willing to allow.
Okay.
So if you have a dawn to dusk type of light or a timer or whatever, that's not motion sensors, of course, would be a bigger problem, because then you're involved with turning them on. But if something works independent of you, you know, interacting with it, that's not a problem.
This one just comes on when it gets dark, goes off when it gets
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay.
Again, according, you know, I don't want to speak for every single person, but generally speaking, we would allow that. We would not have any questions with that. Okay. The next item, ladies, I'd like you to put a line to the word closing. We've got opening / closing blinds, so we're really only going to focus on opening blinds. Opening blinds. So what I mean here is you've got plants in front of the window, common place to put your plants, and you want to open the blind. Your goal in opening the blinds is to allow air, light in, to maybe allow air in, to be able to see outside. So is that a problem or not? Because at the end of the day, you're now allowing sunlight in and hitting your plant. Is that an issue? So this is a complicated question, and the bottom line is, as long as your intention is for light or for the view or for air, it's not a problem. This is one of those complicated questions. Is it a psique ratio? Is it A leading directly to B? There's a whole bunch of essays written on this particular issue. A simple act of opening your levelers, but that's the bottom line is it's permissible as long as the goal is not for the plant. And it obviously takes some intellectual honesty. If your goal is also for the plant, then just leave it up Friday afternoon and let it do its thing. But if your goal in opening it on Shabbos is for the light or for other reasons, that's fine. No problem at all. Now, house plants that tip over. Yeah, kids running through the house, for example, and knock over the plant that's been sitting there minding its own business for 20 years, and then bam. So one is not allowed to replant it. To clean it all up and put it back in the pot is an act of zareah. Because the way it is now, knocked over in whatever form, whatever the mess is, would certainly not be as good for the plant as putting it back in. So you could sweep the dirt to the side. You know, that gets into the muksa issues we discussed before. If it's in the way, if it's unsightly, that type of thing, you could sweep it to the side, but one would not be allowed to put the dirt back together with the plant on Shabbos.
So could you tip the plant back up and then scoop anything that had fallen out of the way to pick the plant back up? As long as it's not out, but it's just like knocked over?
Generally not. I wouldn't. Only because, again, depending, you know, who knows how it's going to land exactly, and one suspects, you know, being back upright the way it wants to be is going to be directly benefiting. Part of the, just to contrast this with before, opening the blind and not intending to benefit the plant is indirect enough. It may benefit the plant, but there's a bunch of reasons, and one of them is indirect. Here, you're actually picking up the plant, which is muksa, by the way, and putting it back upright, that's a problem. Muksa problems, array problem, that should not be, so this is one of those great examples of set things up before Shabbos. You can't have a perfect environment, but certainly if the plant keeps getting knocked over, move the plant.
Can you imagine to end of the Shabbat?
What's that?
Can you imagine the house?
After Shabbat, right.
Everything knocked over.
Liana would leave it just where it was. She wouldn't touch it at all.
Yeah, so that's certain, you know.
And since you're talking about tipping over, if you're at the Shabbos meal and food falls on the floor, do you leave it? Or you
food falls on the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a problem. For people, traffic-wise.
Yeah, not a problem. I mean, the food itself is not mixed, so certainly. Oh. And you certainly can clean it up.
Are you allowed to sweep it up, or...?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, the only issue there would be, like, dirt, for example, which is muksa, or the plant, or whatever else is muksa, so then the limitation there would be only move it out of the way, people not going to trip, or it's unsightly. But something like food, which is not muksa at all, and not a problem at all. And we'll get to ma'amer, which is related to that. We'll talk about that by next week. Okay. Let's see. We just wrap this up. Cut flowers. So, cut flowers. The main point I want to make here is, ladies, you can't put cut flowers. Someone comes for Shabbos and they bring flowers for the Shabbos table. Those flowers cannot be put in water on Shabbos. Even though they're dead. I hate to say that. A bunch of ladies, but even though those flowers are no longer living, so to speak, they're not potted. Right, that's one of the things men never understand is why ladies like dead flowers so much. Putting them in water is considered a problem for. It's related to Zareya. They'll open still. It's not technically Zareya in the real sense, but one should not put them in water. So if someone comes with flowers, let's say they haven't accepted Shabbos yet, and you did. You already lit candles and accepted Shabbos. The best thing is to put them in a vase without water. They're not muksa, but they are not. You cannot put them in water once Shabbos starts. Yeah. Well, if it, my suspicion though is that if the stems are lying on these little balls, they're probably, you know, a certain amount releasing back into the. It keeps it moist. It keeps it the humidity, whatever. So that would be a problem. To put it on those on Shabbos, I mean, I'm making some assumptions here, but if that is the effect, that would be a problem. A dry vase where there's no more water in there than anywhere else is not a problem. But if there's wet sponge or, you know, whatever, that would be a problem on Shabbos.
Now, you said if the person that brought the flowers, if someone brought the flowers to you and they have not accepted Shabbos yet, then you can put them in an empty vase? But what about...
Well, they could... I mean, if they want...
They
could
water.
Yeah, you can certainly even tell them to, ask them to.
Tell them to bring with ways together.
But you, if you've lit, let's say, and they didn't...
Right.
And you've accepted Shabbos, then you cannot put those in water.
So you could just put it in an empty vase.
Empty,
then.
Yep.
Okay.
And after Shabbos...
I guess you'll probably get to that. I remember there are times they had, events after Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Not after Shabbos, but during... After Shabbos, you're davening on Shabbos, and there would be flowers there, and the person forgot to put them in a vase. So that's not permitted?
To then put it in a vase would not be, again, it would dry would be okay.
Okay.
But no, you cannot put them in wet.
Mm-mm. But it's okay to move cut flowers in a vase.
Yep.
I mean.
Yes, they're not muksa. Not muksa.
There's a misconception because I think we've all heard, like, people say, right.
Like,
there's a vase of flowers on the table, you can't move it.
Right.
I mean, I was told,
like,
pot plant, you couldn't move
it. Potted plants are different. Yes. Potted plants, which I have an add on here, is considered muksa. Okay. It's a plant, it's like any other non kli, and that would in fact be muksa. But flowers in water is not muksa. Okay. See how the leniency is you're learning? It's great. Okay. So maybe just really quickly, so we just wrap this up. Unripe fruit in a paper bag is perfectly fine. If one's interested in putting unripe whatever in a paper bag, apparently it makes them sweeter. That's not considered Zareya. That's perfectly fine. And then places that are not suitable to grow anything we mentioned already is fine. So that, I don't know, theoretically throwing those watermelon seeds in a place where you know very well is just there's no way in the world it's ever going to grow would actually be permissible. I wouldn't necessarily recommend trying it, but technically it's fine. And then the last point I do have is the question just to ask, which is potted plants. Potted plants are muksa. You can't water them. You can't, forget it. They're muksa, hands off. You can look at them. But that is it. Very different than the flowers we just discussed, which you can move around, no problem.
And that's put in a paper bag, and if they're not in a paper bag.
So I can't say I've ever done it, but if you want, apparently putting unripe fruit in a paper bag will hasten the ripening. That's considered sweetening, the sugars change forms, whatever, that's fine. It's not considered zorea at all. Perfectly fine. Okay. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.